ניצובים מן פרק ויילך. Towards the end of Parshas Vayelech is the description of the final conversation that takes place between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Moshe Rabbeinu. And there are three psukim which, when you read them superficially, they're very, very strange. There are two introductory psukim before we get to these three psukim, which tell us that the Ribbono Shel Olam spoke to Moshe Rabbeinu, and he said to him, "Hein korvu yomecha lamus," you're about to die. "Kro es Yeshua," go call, summon Yeshua. "I want both of you to stand in the Ohel Moed, and then I'm going to give certain instructions," says the Ribbono Shel Olam to Yeshua. The pasuk continues and says that Vayelech Moshe v'Yeshua. So Moshe and Yeshua did what they were told by the Ribbono Shel Olam, v'yisyatzu v'Ohel Moed, and they went and stood at the Ohel Moed. At which point the Ribbono Shel Olam appeared, and the Ribbono Shel Olam starts speaking to Moshe Rabbeinu. What does he say to him? He says to him the following: "Vayemer Hashem Moshe." The Ribbono Shel Olam says to Moshe Rabbeinu, "Hincha sheichei ima v'isecha." You're going to die. The Klal Yisrael are going to continue their journey into Eretz Yisrael. "V'kom ha'om hazeh," and then this nation, in other words, Klal Yisrael, are going to get up. "V'zona achrei Elohei necha ha'oretz ashehu bo shama v'kirvoi." They're going to start going after the gods of the nations who are living in Eretz Yisrael. They're going to start being Eved Avodah Zarah. They're going to start following the lifestyle of the Toshvei Canaan. "Ve'azovani," and they're going to forsake me. "Ve'hefer es brisi asher korati itoy," and they're going to be mefir, they're going to annul the bris, the covenant that I made with them in reference to Shmiras HaTorah. That's pasuk number one. So Ribbono Shel Olam is giving Moshe Rabbeinu a description of what's going to happen when Klal Yisrael go into Eretz Yisrael, that they're going to become Ovdei Avodah Zarah. They're going to become Ovrei Avera. They're going to go away from Darkei Hashem. So the Ribbono Shel Olam says, "I'll explain to you what my response is going to be to those actions of Klal Yisrael. V'chora api boy." So my anger is going to flare up against them. "V'azav tim," and I will forsake them. "V'histarti ponai mehem," and I will conceal my face from them. "V'hayo le'echol," and they will become prey for anybody who wants to prey on them. They're going to start suffering. "U'mitza'uhu rabbis rabbis v'tzorais," and all sorts of evils, and all sorts of problems, and all sorts of troubles, and all sorts of distresses are going to happen to them. "V'yoma," and what's their response going to be when all this happens? "V'yoma b'yomahu," they're going to respond and they're going to say, "Haloi al ki ein eloi kai bekilbi mitza'uni horois ha'ela." that all this happened to me because Ein Elikai Bekilbi, because we forgot about the Ribbono Nishlay. That's pasuk number two. In other words, there's a nevuah here. There's a prophecy here. There's a description of how Klal Yisrael are going to behave in the future. The fact that they're going to be Avrei Averis. There's a description here of the response of the Ribbono Shel Olam, namely that he will, because of this, create tremendous problems for Klal Yisrael. They will suffer. There will be all sorts of tremendous suffering that Klal Yisrael will go through. All the klolis of the Teichacha will occur. And Klal Yisrael are going to realize that the reason why all these events happened to them is because they were Oizev. Because they forsook the Ribbono Shel Olam. And what should the next pasuk say? So lechura, the next pasuk should say, and then, because Klal Yisrael realize that everything that's happening to them is happening to them as an oinish, as a punishment for the fact that they were Oizev es Torasi. So they have a hakora, they've recognized Darkei Hashem, they've recognized how the Ribbono Shel Olam works and how the Ribbono Shel Olam reacts. And then they'll be chayzer b'tshuva. Because recognition, hakaras hachet, recognizing chet, recognizing that there's hashkacha in the world, recognizing that there's a give and take, that there's chav einish, that the Ribbono Shel Olam reacts to the way in which people behave, is the first stage in the process of tshuva. So Klal Yisrael, by realizing and by saying, Halayal kien eli kai bekilbi mitzauni oroi Yisraelis, started off the tshuva process. So what should the next stage be? Lichur, the next stage should be the Ribbono Shel Olam should shower upon them a tremendous yata nishmaya. They've made the move. They've started a movement towards tshuva. And therefore the Ribbono Shel Olam should now give them a tremendous siyata d'shmaya, shuva elai v'ashuva aleichem. That was the haftocha of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Now look at what the pasuk says, the next pasuk. Says Ribbono Shel Olam, you know what my reaction is going to be to that? V'anechi haster astir ponai b'yayimahu. I will conceal myself with even more concealment than there was before. There'll be a haster astir. There'll be a total astora. Al kolor ra she'osa. Because of all the ra that they did, kipona el Elohim acherim, because they followed foreign gods. Klal Yisrael is starting off a whole process of tshuva here, and the Ribbono Shel Olam totally ignores it. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'm going to make even a bigger hest upon him because of what they did. Fine, they did, but they already said, they've started tshuva, so why is Ribbono Shel Olam reacting in this vicious manner? It's a pella, what's going on here? I think the answer lies in a conversation which is described by Shlomo HaMelech. Shlomo HaMelech describes a conversation which goes on between the Ribbono Shel Olam and Klal Yisrael. The entirety of Shir HaShirim is conversations that are going on between the Ribbono Shel Olam and between Klal Yisrael. Chazal explained Shir HaShirim. The Shir HaShirim is a recording of conversations, of dialogues, that are taking place between the Ribbono Shel Olam and between Knesset Yisrael and between Klal Yisrael. And in the fifth parak of Shir HaShirim, Shlomo HaMelech describes the Klal Yisrael turn around to the Ribbono Shel Olam, and they say to the Ribbono Shel Olam, Ani Yisheino, I'm sleeping, but V'libi Er, but my heart is awake, my heart is still beating. Ani Yisheino, say Klal Yisrael. Klal Pechutz, if you look at us, you don't see any sign of life whatsoever. But that's not reality. That's just a superficial impression that you, Ribbono Shel Olam, are getting. Because Libi Er, if you're talking about what's going on inside us, if you're talking about what's going on with Oimek Nafshenu, if you're talking about what's going on deep down inside us, Libi Er, we do want to have a relationship with the Ribbono Shel Olam. It's just that externally it looks that we're asleep. You're walking on the street and you see a guy. He's lying flat on the floor. He's lying flat out in the middle of the street. There are two options. He could have had a massive heart attack and died there. Or he could have gone to sleep there because he had nowhere else to sleep. How do you determine whether he's alive or whether he's just sleeping or whether he's dead? The answer is, the first thing is listen for a heartbeat. If there's no heartbeat, he's dead. If his heart's beating, then he's sleeping. So wake him up, or he eventually in his own accord will wake up and he'll walk away. Klal Yisrael say, Ani Yisheino, I may look dead spiritually, but if you listen carefully, you'll hear that my heart is still beating. Will he be here? Therefore, say Klal Yisrael to the Ribbono Shel Olam, don't get angry with us. The fact that we're doing chatoim at the moment, that's because Ani Yisheino. But don't lose hope in me, because Be'etzim Libier, I'm still alive. The heart's still beating. The intent I have, good intentions I have. It's just I can't get the act together at the moment. So don't get upset about it. Continues the pasuk and says, Koil Doidi Doifek. That the Ribbono Shel Olam knocks at the door and he says, Pischi li achosi rayosi yainosi tamosi. What's the response of the Ribbono Shel Olam? The Ribbono Shel Olam's response is, Pischi li achosi rayosi yainosi tamosi. The Ribbono Shel Olam knocks at the door. The Ribbono Shel Olam knocks at the door. How does the Ribbono Shel Olam knock at the door? Chazal say that the way in which the Ribbono Shel Olam knocks at the door is that Klal Yisrael in general and every individual in his own personal life has those occasions. It doesn't matter where he's holding, in terms of his mitzvahs, or in terms of his averus. It doesn't matter whether he's a tzaddik, it doesn't matter whether he's a rosh, it doesn't matter whether he's a beinoni, it doesn't matter who he is, or what he is, or when he is. Every single individual has, in the course of the year, occasions when the Ribbono Shel Olam does a tremendous chesed with him, and he knocks on the door. How does he knock on the door? Doidi, doifek. the way an uncle knocks on the door. And as we said last week, when uncles knock on the door, they bring gifts. They don't knock on the door in order to beat you up. Every individual in his life has occasions, year in, year out, where he sees clearly that Ribbono Shel Olam does a chesed to him. But the Ribbono Shel Olam does something for him. But all of a sudden he says to himself, wow, that was a Siyata Dishmaya. There the Ribbono Shel Olam did me a favor. That's the Kol Deidi Dafek. That's the Ribbono Shel Olam knocking at the door. And when the Ribbono Shel Olam knocks at the door, and the Ribbono Shel Olam does something for us, says Shlomo HaMelech, it's a statement. The Ribbono Shel Olam's talking to us. What's he saying to us? He's saying to us, Pischi Li, open the door. And how does the Ribbono Shel Olam refer to us? With every single expression of the ultimate in closeness between two individuals. Achosi, Rayosi, Yenosi, Tamosi. These are all expressions of two people who are ultimately close. Ribbono Shel Olam does a chesed for us because he's a doid, because he's Achosi, Rayosi, Yenosi, Tamosi. And that chesed is a message. And that chesed is, do me a favor. Pischili. Open up for me. And Chazal come along and Chazal say the following. There's opening and there's opening. You can open a door a millimeter. You can open a door a centimeter. You can open a door a meter. You can fling the door wide open. Say Chazal, the Ribbono Shel Olam says to Klal Yisrael, Pischili Pesach Shel Machad. What I'm asking from you is to open the door just like a needle prick, that's all. And if you do that, then Ani Eftach Lochem, say Chazal. The Ribbono Shel Olam says, I'll open for you. I'll widen that opening to a degree where you'll be able to bring in through that opening wagons and chariots of Shefa Tov. But, says the Ribbono Shel Olam, I need that you should give me that opening. And what does Klal Yisrael respond to that? What's Klal Yisrael's response to that? Continues Shlomo HaMelech and he says, I'll describe to you what Klal Yisrael's response is. Klal Yisrael's response is Poshatati es kutonti. Klal Yisrael turned around to the Ribbono Shel Olam and say, I just got undressed. I just went to bed. I just went to lie down. Eichocha el b'sheno. I haven't got koyach to get up now. I haven't got koyach to do it now. I agree with you, I understand you, Ribbono Shel Olam, I understand everything. I understand what's going on. And I understand that all that's necessarily is a Pesach Shel Machat. And I'm willing to do it. I have all the intent in the world that I'll do it. It's just not convenient this second. Tomorrow. I'll start from tomorrow morning. Just another film. Just another visit into town. Just once more. And then I'll start. I was once witness to a conversation that was going on a plane between a guy who wanted, it was a Jewish guy who wanted to eat a trefa meal. And the guy who was sitting next to him was arguing with him. And eventually they made a bet. And he said to him, if I can convince you about something, if I can convince you that Torah is Min HaShemayim, are you willing to start eating kosher? And the guy said, yeah, if you can convince me, I'll start eating kosher. Anyway, they got into this discussion. It took about 45 minutes. And this guy slugged him up. He, the guy, the whole story, but he slugged him up.
So he said to him, so now you're willing to eat kosher? The guy said, sure, I'll eat kosher. When I finish this meal, I'll start eating kosher. That's human nature. That's the way that we all are. Yeah, I agree with you, Rebbe Nishan, you're right. All I have to do is one small thing, and I'll do it tomorrow. What can be delayed till tomorrow, never do today, as the law goes. Rachatzti es raglai eichocho atanfein. I just had a shower. Now I want to get up, go this, and do this, and go down. Okay, tomorrow. I'll do it tomorrow. That's the response of Klal Yisrael. To which the Pasuk says, Doidi sholach yodoi min hachoyah. So Rebbe Nishlan sends his hand in through the keyhole of the door. That's how Rashi explains the Pasuk, sholach yodoi min hachoyah. Hachoyah means a hole, it means the hole of the key, where you put the key into the door. Umei homo alo. And then what happens? Continues the pasuk and says, "Patachti ani l'daydi." When the Rebbe Nishlan puts his hand through the hole in the door, "Patachti ani l'daydi." So the door is now open for the Rebbe Nishlan. And then I suddenly realized that "daydi chomak over," the Rebbe Nishlan has disappeared. "Yot nafshi yotza bedabroi." And then I don't stop crying out to him and looking for him. Bikashtiu. I try to find him, Velo Mitzasi, and I can't find him. Karosi, if I call for him, Velo Ononi, he doesn't answer me. And then Shlomo HaMelech continues and says, I start running around looking for the Ribbono Shel Olam. And Hashem Rimas Seivim Be'ir. And the guards who are protecting the city, Hikuni, Psauni, they start hitting me, it's after curfew, you should be in bed already, what are you doing out? And I'm going mad looking for him. And I can't find him. And Ishbati Eschem B'nei Yerushalayim. So I turn around to all the inhabitants of the city, and I say to them, Imtimsu Es Daidi, I'm looking for the Rebbe Nishlan, but I can't find him. But if you find him, do me a favor. Tell him over something in my name. What? Mata Gidilei, what should you tell him over in my name? Shecheles Ava Oni. That Abemis. I'm an Oyev Hashem. What's this business about the Rebbe Nishlan putting his hand through the hole in the door? The motion that's given to explain this pasuk is a couple with a large family who can't find a babysitter. There's a couple who have a large family and they can't find a babysitter, but they have to go out that night. So they call the oldest daughter, who's a young teenager, and they say, listen, you're a big girl already. We have to go out. You've got our cell phone number if something goes wrong. Lock the doors. Go to sleep. And if by any chance one of the kids wakes up or something goes wrong and you need us, give us a call and we'll come back home. And they leave. And this young girl is left looking after the family. And of course she's convinced that in the middle of the night someone's going to try and break into the house. And the more she's there on her own, before she goes to bed, every creak, every squeak, every noise in the street, it must be a gunner who's trying to get in. Until she's totally, totally paranoid about the fact that somebody is definitely going to try and break in while her parents are away. So she locks the windows of the house and she locks the door of the house. But then she gets even more nervous because if the guy is a thief and he's going to break in, he's a burglar, then he knows how to break in through a locked door as well. It's not a problem. So he's obviously going to be able to get through the door even if the door is locked. So locking the door isn't going to help in the slightest. So what does she do? She starts moving furniture around in the house. How does she move furniture around in the house? She takes all the furniture that exists in the house and she puts it in between the front door and the back wall of the dining room. So in front of the door she's got a table, and then she's got the chairs, and then she's got beds, and then she's got bookcases, and you know what? And the whole room is jammed full of furniture, which is jammed up against the door, that even if the guy will be able to break through the door, he won't be able to open it. Because the whole room is now one great fortress because of all the furniture that's in the middle. And then she says, now it's safe, she'll go to bed. So she gets into bed. But as she gets into bed, she hears strange noises. There's nothing more she can do because she's already locked the door, she's already put all the furniture there against the door, she's already locked all the windows. So what's she going to do now? So the female mind, which is, as we all know, very versatile, comes up with a new angle. Even if the thief manages to get through the door and break in through the furniture, it doesn't necessarily mean that he'll know if I'm here, that I'm here, if he can't find me. So she crawls underneath the blankets so that if the thief comes in, he won't be able to see her, and she promptly falls asleep. But then the parents get home. And they get home, they put their key in the front door, and they push the door, and what happens? There's no way. The door doesn't open. They don't know what's going on behind. All they know is that the lock doesn't work and the door's broken. So the husband says, no problem, I'll go up through the drainpipe outside. So he climbs up the drainpipe outside, but he can't get in through the window because the windows are locked. So now they're standing outside and all the kids are inside on their own, and they're outside and they can't get in. So he's standing there scratching his head, and what can he do? And then he suddenly says to himself, you know what, I've got a great idea. He turns around to his wife and he says, do we have a plumber who lives here anywhere? She says, yeah, sure, there's a plumber who lives in the building office here. He says, great, let me go to the plumber. She says, go to the plumber, it's 12:30 at night, it takes double at night. He says, no, I don't need the plumber, I need something that the plumber's got. So she goes to the plumber. He goes to the plumber, he rings the doorbell, the plumber comes out, with a sleepy look on his face, and he says, how can I help you? And the guy says to him, tell me, do you have that contraption that all plumbers have? So he says, then what are you talking about? He says, you know that thing that you wave around every time you come to a house and you don't do anything with it, but then you charge me 600 shekel even though you did nothing. So the guy says, then what are you talking about? He says, did you go to school for plumbers? He says, yeah. He says, you've got a degree in plumbery? And the guy says, yeah. He says, so what do they teach you? They teach you that you've got to buy this piece of equipment, it costs you 10 shekel, you don't do anything with it, you don't have to know how to fix anything, you just have to have this thing. When people call you and they say, the drain's not working, the pipe's blocked, you wave this thing around and then you charge 600 shekel and you go away and nothing's happened, you haven't solved anything, but that's all part of being a plumber. So the guy says, you mean my wire? And he says, yeah, that thing you send down the pipe, you know, long, thin thing that you send down the pipe. And the guy says, yeah, of course I got one. So he says, can I borrow it for 10 minutes? The guy says, fine, no problem, 600 shekel. He says, no, I'm not going to use it, I just need to borrow it for a minute, I'm not going to put it down any pipes. You, the one who puts it down the pipes. You know how to put it down the pipes. I'm going to put it down the pipes. So the guy says, tell me, are you drunk? He says, no, I've got a problem. I'll explain to you some other time. I just need this long, thin piece of wire. So the guy says to him, fine. He gives him the wire. He comes to back home. His wife's standing outside the front door. He says, problem solved. This is how. He says, watch this. He says, I don't remember exactly, because I haven't got that sense of direction. I'm not too good at sense of direction. Yeah, he's like me. Right? There's some people who without GPS are lost completely because they've got no sense of direction. You're looking at one. No sense of direction whatsoever. I once got threatened by murder. A Puerto Rican once threatened to kill me. He was a toll guy on the Tappan Zee Bridge. When I came around the sixth time, because I was completely totally lost and just kept going around in circles, he flung the money back at me and he said, if I see you one more time here, I will kill you. It was a major problem because as I came around the seventh time, I was scared out of my mind. I nearly killed myself because I got to a different lane because I was scared stiff to go through this guy. I think it took me 11 times to go around. In the end, I worked out what the problem was. The Tappan Zee Bridge moved. It moved every time between my circles, so it wasn't in the same place as it was before. That's why I ended up going around it. But I have that problem with the Arizona, I have that problem with a lot of bridges. I always end up going round them like 15 times, because if you've got no sense of direction, then that's the way that you work. My wife maintains that if I have to get from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak, I first go to Tveria. Why? She says, because you know the way from Yerushalayim to Tveria, and you know the way from Tveria to Bnei Brak. So you go to Tveria, and then you go to Bnei Brak. You can't get from Yerushalayim to Bnei Brak, and you've got a female voice telling you, you know, turn right, turn left, turn right, turn left. Otherwise, completely lost. So this guy says, I've got a sense of direction. He says to his wife, just describe to me where the beds are. So she says, well, there's one bed here, there's one bed there. She describes it. He says, fine. So he gets this wire and he puts it into the key hole. And he starts moving it around until he eventually gets to his daughter, who's fast asleep in bed. And he manages to get the wire to prod the foot of his daughter. And he keeps on prodding the foot. She dives out of bed and she screams, Gareth! Gareth, there's a Gareth in the house. To which he screams, there's no Gareth in the house. It's your father. He's stuck outside. Will you please open the door? So after 3 hours, it takes to move all the furniture away. They get in. So Shlomo HaMelech, Doidi sholach yodoi min hachor. The Rebbe Shlomo sends a wire in through the keyhole. It gives you a prod. A tzara here, a tzara there, you see him here, you see him there, a cancer here, a cancer there, a war here, a war there. All sorts of different things to wake you up. And then, kamti ani liftayach l'doidi. He's woken me up, so I get up to open the door for him. Pasachti ani l'doidi, and I open the door. L'doidi chayim. Over Nafshi, he's gone. The Rebbeinu Shalom says the following. The Rebbeinu Shalom says, the way the world is, that it's not hefka. The world is not hefka. You do something, there's a reaction. The Rebbeinu Shalom reacts. That's mitzad echad. Mitzad sheni, the Rebbeinu Shalom is a mative. The Rebbeinu Shlom wants to do chasodim. Derech hatayv lahaytiv, says the Ramchal. The Rebbeinu Shlom, who by definition is the ultimate in toiv, wants to be mative because that's the nature of toiv. The nature of toiv is that they want to be mative. So the Rebbeinu Shlom doesn't want to be cruel, the Rebbeinu Shlom wants to be good. But the Rebbeinu Shlom is asking us for one thing and one thing only. He says, I need a slight movement on your part, kepitzchei shel machatz. I need that on your part. Just one movement. You're telling me that ani yisheinu v'libi er. You're telling me that ba'etim your heart's still beating. Your heart's in the right place. You want to. It's just that yisheinu. You're heavy with sleep. It's difficult. Says the Rebbeinu Shlom, fine. I have no problem with that. Kol dodi defek. I'll give you a certain chesed. But I want that the response should, the chesed should be minimum movement in your part. Do something. I'm not asking the world, because nobody changes overnight. I'm not asking, says the Rebbeinu Shlom, that you should do a 180 degree turnaround. That doesn't happen. In real life, that sort of thing doesn't happen. Only by people who are totally unstable, right, and end up in Breslov. But normal people don't do that. Normal people can't make a 180 degree turnabout in one shot just overnight. Says Rebbeinu Shlom, I'm not asking that, but just do something. Some movement. And if I see some movement in your part, says the Rebbeinu Shlom, then I will give you everything. I'll give you siyata dishmaya, that the rest I'll take care of. As long as there's something coming from you. Minimum. But if you don't, says the Rebbeinu Shlom, you're going to have to wait until I slam you. You're going to have to wait until tzoras come. And it's only after all the tzoras come that finally you wake up and you say, oh, there's a Rebbeinu Shlom, and I've got to get back to him. If that's what you're waiting for, says the Rebbeinu Shlom, I don't respond to that.
I'm not willing to wait because you can't be bothered to make one small move, because every time I ask you, you say, I'll do it. But tomorrow, not today. Tonight, not this morning. Tomorrow morning, not tonight. In another hour, another 2 hours. After I finish with Yonah, then I'll worry about it. Now I've got other things to sort out. Then I'll worry about the Beis HaMikdash. Says Rabbeinu Shlalem, I'm not willing to wait. And if I have to slam you, says Rabbeinu Shlalem, then V'anechi, says Rabbeinu Shlalem, as it says in this week's parasha, Asta Asta Pana V'yemahu. If Klal Yisrael can only say, Al Ki'ein Elei Kai Bekir Bi Mitzauni Oroi Yisraela, if it's only after they get slammed that Klal Yisrael say, Ein Elei Kai Bekir Bi, then says Rabbeinu Shlalem, V'anechi Asta Asta Pana V'yemahu Al Kol Aro Asher. Because I was waiting for something before that happened. And if there's not that something before it happened, then there's a problem. Rabbi say, it's less than a week to Rosh Hashanah. Rosh Hashanah is not a game, Rosh Hashanah is not a joke. Rosh Hashanah is a day on which it's Nechtav, it's Nechtav on Yom Kippur, what the next year holds in store. The Chazon Ish was learning with his chavrusa, and a mosquito started driving them crazy. And his chavrusa said to the Chazon Ish, it's a summer mosquito. And it was in the summer, from the heat, from the water, the mosquitoes come out. To which the Chazon Ish, without looking out from his Gemara, said, Sinishkin zumadika yitush, it's not a summer mosquito. It's a mosquito that it was determined on Rosh Hashanah that on this and this day we shouldn't be able to learn, because there will be a mosquito that will be disturbing us. Everything, exactly how the next year is going to look is going to be determined in the 48 hours of Rosh Hashanah, whether we like it or not. And the Ribbono Shel Olam did a chesed with us that he gave us days before Rosh Hashanah. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you've got two choices. You can wait and do nothing, in which case you will anyway at the end beg to do tshuva, because I will slam you from every single direction that you will go running around looking for me. And you'll get beaten up on the way. And all sorts of things will happen to you, and you'll be running around you and you'll be screaming. Im timtu es doidi matagidi l'shecheres avoni. But it'll be too late. Just one small movement. We've got 6 days left. What the Rebbeinu Shel Olam says is one small movement. One gesture to the Rebbeinu Shel Olam that we're not the category of people who are constantly giving excuses of Pashatati Eskutanti, Eichel B'Shena, Rechatsi Yitzragla, Eichel Ha'atamfein. No. Now, immediately, we're willing to do something. How can a guy stand Rosh Hashanah in front of the Ribbono Shel Olam and ask him that the year should be a year without sorrows if he can't be bothered to get up and say a couple of words to the Ribbono Shel Olam in the morning? If he can't be bothered to come to a davening? So what does he want? So why has he got tainus? Of course his life is a mess, and his life will remain a mess. It doesn't change. It doesn't change. The way you are when you're 18 is the way you are when you're 28, is the way when you are 48. You're a loser at 18, you're a loser at 48. You're a loser in yeshiva, you're a loser in a marriage. You're a loser in yeshiva, you're a loser in a business. That's the way it works. The Bodhika Minister, it's a statistic. It's proven time and time again. Right? I have this game that we play the whole time. I read over to myself, we write these names down the whole time. This is the guy who's going to be divorced 3 times. This is a guy who's going to move from 17 jobs in 1 year. Why? Because nothing changes. The way you are is the way you will be and the way you will remain. Unless the Ribbono Shel Olam gives you Siyata Dishmaya. But the Ribbono Shel Olam only gives Siyata Dishmaya if there's something coming from you. If there's some movement. Yeah, Sunday morning, Friday's a bad day.
Friday is not a davening day. Friday is a day in which we're atheists. We believe in God. Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday we're atheists. Shabbos we're drunk. Sunday we start again being normal. Doesn't matter.